完璧などありえない。この世界は不完全だから、美しい。
バカバカバカ、
なに
俺は海賊王になる。
なんて恋しさなの。
力を渡した時に言ったことを覚えているかい。クレ、違う、そこじゃない。
変態遅い。
Hello and welcome. More Than Hentai, a podcast that is here to show you that anime is just far more than tentacles and cat girls. There's also countless stories of love, loss, laughs, hope, horror, and happiness that are just dying to be found. And I, Brendan White, the Salt and Pepper Senpai, I'm here to help you find them. More Than Hentai is proudly powered by our friends over at Audio Technica and Dash Water. So please go upgrade your audio and hydration games today. And joining me in the Segoy studio is a dear friend of mine who is not only 33.33% of the Falcon, a footy podcast, but he's also a master of prop making and gin consuming, and was last heard on this exact RSS feed fawning over Makima from Chainsaw Man way back on episode 5. You can find him in the socials at Jesse Spanner. Jesse, you bloody legend. Welcome back to the studio, my friend. How might you be doing?
Thanks for having me. Can we just appreciate how hard your intro goes? It is art. It is so hype.
I try my best. I get very short on breath, so I've got to try and pace it and time it to make sure that the momentum and the impact hits the right way. So hopefully I did you proud, my friend.
This is why you're the best in the biz.
Ooh, can I get that in writing? Can I get that in some official capacity? I need that on a business card.
I'll get a tattoo on my chest for you, baby.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I love that. And I love you. And I love that we're back in the virtual podcast realm. Yes. Again, talking all things anime. But before we do that, let's talk some life. Like, we don't need to do the deep dive on your anime origin story. We sort of unpacked that in a nice way back, as I said, on episode 5, where we gushed collectively about Chainsaw Man and our love affair with Makima. I want to know, first and foremost, have you finished the first season of Chainsaw Man now? Have you completed that since last we spoke?
No. So, like I said in the episode, I fell off anime. I'm an anime basic bitch. I like the most basic stuff, which, look, Chainsaw Man, I think, is quite approachable for an anime outsider. But I fall off anime really, really quickly. It took me rewatching Dragon Ball Super recently, which I loved every second of. And I finished it. I'm like, all right, it's back. This is a proper reawakening. So I got through Dragon Ball Super. I started on JoJo's.
That is a interesting journey to take as well. I do like that every season is oh so different and thematically, like the universes they take you to are fun and interesting and new. But how you been finding JoJo's? Because it is something I don't think is for everybody, if I'm going to put it lightly.
So everyone told me, oh, get through the first few episodes. It starts off a bit slow and then it picks up. It gets real fun. I've been the reverse. I really like the first half of the first season. With a bit more classical. Mm-hmm. And then season two with the stands and everything like that, kind of losing me a little bit. So I'm not smashing that one out as much as I planned on. So I was looking for a new show to start. Mm-hmm. And I think that new show could be a show we're about to talk about.
That makes me very happy. Like, I'm sad that JoJo's hasn't sort of hit the way that you've wanted it to. The good thing is, I guess you can jump in and out depending on what you're vibing as far as maybe the characters you might be wanting to look at or the period of where this particular season's set. Like Stone Mountain, I really, really love. Meeting Jolene and the whole prison arc that they got going on there is funky as hell. Stardust Crusaders is really fun too, but yeah, Phantom Blood, it starts like, it just gets nuts after like the first episode and a half. You're like, I don't know how I feel about this. And then obviously, plot twist and crazy shit in shoes. And you're like, okay, I'm vibing. I'm all about this. Give me more of this, please. Give me more Dio being a son of a bitch.
Oh, I love Dio so much. The reason I got into JoJo is because I don't know anybody who likes JoJo's. They absolutely love it and they will not stop talking about it. So I could see why if it sinks its teeth into you, it really does. Mm. I may just play a little bit hot and cold with it.
That's fair. That's fair. I think I'm more in the camp of like over like love and my teeth, something's teeth getting sunk into me. Like I'm more of like, this is fine. This is fun. This is enjoyable. Is it the greatest of all time? No way. But like I've watched far, far worse.
Because you've watched every anime conceivable.
I have watched many, many an anime. Like I was just, I haven't fully got my anime list up to date. But like looking at it just now, so far in my lifetime, I've watched 114.9 days worth of anime in my life, which equates to 6,867 episodes of anime.
I don't know about your listeners, but for me, a day is 24 hours. How long are your days? How do you fit all this in?
My problem, for better or for worse, when I am into something, like I am in, like I love big, I feel big, I am passionate in a big way about things. And so when I get something that's, using that analogy again, sinks its teeth into me, like I want it to like eat me and consume me wholly and solely, and I'll do the same. So yeah, I am just like chewing through seasons on the daily. Like when something's out, like say a JoJo's, I'll just sit and watch it like as often and as much as I can. Like I'm not like the whole, I want a weekly sit down. I want it all and I want it now. So like, yeah, it's a problem, but it's also like, it's a blessing and a curse, Jesse. It's a blessing and a curse.
I love that. You don't do anything in half measures.
No. I go full ass. It's never half ass around here. It is full ass all day, every day.
I wish I could do something. Like I'm kind of full ass into like laying on the couch for half the day. Like I'm really good at that. I'm any better. But I just can't focus on stuff, which is probably something I need to talk to a doctor about.
Yeah, but you are focusing on a new podcast that you're diving into or yes. Receiving a few disposals from, or hopefully, I won't say kicking a behind because, you know, that's not the good thing. You're kicking goals on this podcast, I think. We want to leave the behinds out of this apart from talking about full ass. But yeah, the Falcon of Footy podcast, it is a new adventure for you. It's a new foray into the world of sports podcasting.
Yes.
How the hell is that going? Tell me and the listeners what the Falcon of Footy podcast is all about.
First of all, I just appreciate, I could see the gears turning in your brain to come up with like little footy puns there, and I appreciate it, bottom of my heart.
Wasn't easy.
You did well. See, so, you know, I've done video game podcasts. I've done sort of movie/TV based podcasts. I don't think anyone really knew that I was really into AFL. When I say into AFL, I know
that's the Australian Football League for international listeners.
Yes. Footy if you're nasty. But I don't actually know that much about it. I just like talking about it. And I have a mate, Clarky, who wanted to start a football podcast. I thought, hey, I'll jump on for a few episodes. I'll help out here and there. And then it just clicked. So it's myself, Clarky, and Chris. Every week we talk about nonsense to do with football. We rarely talk about the games in depth. We rarely get our facts straight. I refuse to correct myself on the show. We throw in quizzes. We have, you know, bit of a goof around, but it's been really, really fun. And it's a bit of a different community to get involved in. You know, has the same ups and downs as the gaming community online does, and you know, movie and TV shows and stuff like that. But I know, I think it's something that I've always had in the background of my life, AFL. And now I'm focusing on a little bit more and realizing, okay, I've actually got something to say here.
I love that. I love that. What do you have to say about the cost of like a meat pie and a beer at the footy? Because that is criminal. That's something that needs to be stamped out of the game immediately.
So
exuberant prices, you know, cost of living's hard enough. A meat pie shouldn't be like 10 bones and a beer, which is usually like a Tui's New or some other gutter trash.
Absolute trash garbage.
Is also overpriced. I got strong opinions on that, Jesse.
So when I say I don't know much about football, I'm a weird football fan. I hate going to games. I absolutely detest. I think I've gone to less than 10 games of AFL in my life.
I think I've gone to more, and I don't even understand the sport, and I'm not from the area of AFL. Like I'm a league boy.
Yeah, which is a whole different. We're gonna get you on the Falcon, and we'll cleanse you.
I like that. The sounds of that because I'm a dirty boy. I need a cleansing.
Wow. With live games. Too expensive, too many people, half of them want to fight you. I can't see very well. So even with glasses on, I can't. It just dots on the ground running around. And getting seats is like, I'm a member, so I'm sitting here, but I'm not a member, but I'm also sitting here. Like, what do you, The seating makes no sense to me. It is nonsense. The food choice, like you said, too expensive. And now they're too... You can get fancy stuff. You get like Garmy chicken now. You have to wait 45 minutes to get it. But it's like because of that, they've forgotten that typically a hot dog, a sausage in a bun, the sausage should be the length of the bun. They don't do that anymore. It's about half of it. So I think, you know, inflation hit the sausage, not the bun. So it's just, it's all over the place. It feels messy. I'd rather sit at home for when my team, Essendon, loses, which happens almost all the time. I don't have to be sad. I don't have to be surrounded by the opposition who are happy.
Yeah.
And if the game's boring, I can just turn it off. I can start playing, you know, Fortnite. It's great. Stay at home. That's my
home is good. Like, home is comfortable. Home is safe. You can cook food that didn't cost you an arm and a leg. You can make hot dogs that actually fill the bun appropriately. So yeah. There is a lot of positives here that you're sharing here with the listeners. And Essendon, my heart bleeds for you. I went for them by proxy due to an ex-girlfriend and her family for a hot minute, but we broke up and went. I threw Essendon in the bin at the same time. And now I'm a Western Bulldog supporter. Due to, like, I have two French Bulldogs. I go for the Bulldogs in the rugby league. So I'm like, okay, there's some connective tissue here. There's a theme. I like the colors, blue and white, exactly the same as Canterbury. Like, there's red too, but blue and white, same as Canterbury Bulldogs. Blue's my favorite color. So I'm a Dogs fan these days, Jesse. I hope that doesn't impact this show moving forward.
It will. just on a subconscious level, it definitely will. Like, you can see on the camera, I can't make eye contact with you anymore. No, look, I'm never going to be one of those people who gets mad at other teams. As long as you're going for Collingwood, it's fine. Just,
and that's like, I've only been living in Melbourne now for 2.5 years or so, and all I ever got for the first like 12 months of being here would be like, you know, which team do you go for? And I'm like, oh, I'm still working it out because I was. And all they'd say is the follow-up to that is like, as long as it's not Collingwood, you'll be fine. That's all I heard from every single person that crossed my path in regards to AFL for the first like year of my life here.
I feel like, you know, every sport, there needs to be like the enemy, just the enemy team. And some teams don't matter. Sorry, Doggies, but Western Bulldogs, whatever. Good for them. They won one recently. Cool. Collingwood has just always been sort of the enemy team. And their fans absolutely lap it up. The thing is, some of the nicest people I know go for Collingwood. So none of the stereotypes really work. I meant to, in quotes, hate them as an Essendon supporter. I just whatever.
We're all just trying to get through our days, right? Yeah. We're all just trying to survive. And if our team can get a win on the way through, let's be happy for one another.
Exactly.
Yeah, life's hard enough, Jesse. Life's hard enough without having to deal with nasty, mean Collingwood supporters. Exactly. That's for sure.
I like how I flipped, like, they're real nice enough, scum of the earth.
Yeah, that's all I've heard. You know what? The amount of people that said that, I feel there's always truth. There's always truth to a rumor if you're hearing it that often. Could be only be 1% truth, but there's something in there where that initially stemmed from. So sorry, listeners that are Collingwood supporters, but you're in the anime-sized bin here. But it is fine. Because that bin has plenty of table scraps, because this anime that we're going to be talking about today is a shonen cooking comedy known as Food Wars, which is written by Yuto Sakuda and illustrated by Shun Sakai, and began serialization in Shueisha's Weekly Young Jump from November of 2012 through to June of 2019. Sorry. With its chapters collected into 36 tankobon volumes. By March of 2020, the manga had sold over 20 million copies, making it one of the best-selling manga series of all time, justified in my humble opinion. JC Staff, the studio behind such titles as Toradora, One Punch Man, Season 2, Is It Wrong to Try and Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon, and Prison School, produced a 5-season, 86-episode anime adaptation that began airing in April of 2015, with the final episodes airing in September of 2020. 2015 also saw the release of two video games covering the Food Wars universe, releasing on iOS and Android, as well as 3DS, and they were both published by our friends over at Bandai Namco. Food Wars can be found on HiDive, Crunchyroll, and Netflix, depending on your region and location, and currently holds a score of 8.14 on my anime list. That is based on over 1 million unique user reviews and is the 61st most popular anime overall on the website. And the story of Food Wars is as follows. Soma Yukihara has been cooking alongside his father for as long as he can remember. As a sous chef at his father's restaurant, he has spent years developing his culinary expertise and inventing new dishes to amaze their customers. He aspires to exceed his father's skill and take over the restaurant one day, but is shocked to learn that his father is closing up the shop to take up a job in New York City. Rather than tagging along with his father, Soma finds himself enrolling in the prestigious Tsuki Culinary Academy, where only 10% of its students end up graduating. The school is famous for its shokugeki, intense cooking competitions between students, often used to settle debates and arguments. Soma's father tells him that in order to surpass him and survive, he must last the next 3 years at the academy and graduate. The academy's brutal curriculum and fiercely competitive student body await the young chef, who must learn to navigate the treacherous environment if he wants to stand a chance at realizing his dreams. But is skill alone enough to let him rise to the top? Some might say like a nice fresh loaf of bread. Episode one is titled An Endless Wasteland. We're going to be diving front to back on this episode. We're not going to be going beyond that as far as broader narrative spoilers and plot points. Episode one, An Endless Wasteland, we are going front to back. Nothing is off limits, Jesse. So I wanted to start with, what is your overall general impression on Food Wars, this fantastic anime, which I love oh so much?
Brendan, you know me so well. You know me so well. Yes! So, like you said, we did an episode a few months back, Chainsaw Man, and you looked at me like, you know what Jesse likes? Violence and porn. And then with this one, you're like, you know what else Jesse likes? Food and porn. I knew this show was wild. I told a few people that, you know, I was going to be on the show and Brendan's going to get me to watch Food Wars. And they just gave me that look of just like, you're in for a treat.
Mm-hmm.
So I chuck it on last night and I'm watching it. And I kind of know, you know, they're going to be some like cook-offs. I've seen Iron Chef. I know what this is about. What I didn't expect was for those meals to tickle a few sensations in some of the characters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's such an over-the-top way where it goes past being weird, it goes past being cringy, and loops back around to being really funny. I had some genuine belly laughs watching this show. Some of the most unexpected things, the pseudo pork roast, I lost it. It's so dumb. But so I like to cook. My dad was a chef, so like I was brought up around like kind of cooking culture. So mm-hmm. when they're describing all these different methods of cooking and flavor profiles, I'm like, I know all this. This works. What they're saying on the surface makes sense of how you would make this taste a certain way, but it's so over the top for what the premise is, which is just a cooking show. I mean, you may be to educate me here. Is there a name for anime that's based on very sort of mundane things like cooking in comparison to fighting aliens in space?
You'd classify this like another sort of subgenre that it could be slice of life. So that's like just the general day-to-day life-based things that people would be going in. So it can be focusing on, yeah, people wanting to be chefs or people going to school or people that want to be artists or whatever. So anything that doesn't fall into your fantasies and stuff like that usually just can be bundled into there. So, yeah, this would fall into the slice of life, but then it's got a couple of little sub sort of genres and subtext that I mentioned as well. It's a very unique beast, Food Wars, that's for sure.
The aforementioned porn. Look, let's cut to the chase. When the tentacles came out, like, I know the show's called More Than Hentai, but this was sort of alongside hentai, okay?
And I'm not going to confirm nor deny that this episode and that anime actually like inspired some of the art and the concept of More Than Hentai as far as the branding and the naming, because I love the anime so much and I love everything about it. And yes, it can be a little too on the nose for some, but like it is perfect for me. Like Iron Chef combined with comedy, combined with over the top nonsense, combined with some of that ichi sort of subtext, you know, which is a little bit more fan servicey, that equals a good time for me. And this anime combines all of that into just one of my favorites. Like it's a top 10 anime of all time for me. Like I love it that much. I have got the cookbook. I've got merch. I've got, you know, rare art prints on the wall around the corner. I'm getting tattooed in a week and I'm getting a little homage to Food Wars chucked on me amongst all the other little bangers I'm getting. So yeah, I love it. And I'm so happy that I finally get to talk about it because I've been waiting for a good long time to find somebody that I know would appreciate this, because nothing would break my heart more as if I got somebody on to talk about Food Wars and they just go, this sucked, I hated it, I'm never watching beyond episode one. So I'm happy that I've found my my anime smut brethren in you, and we're riding this tentacle together.
Well, god damn it, that caught me off guard, as it did with some of the characters in the show. What was it about this show that made you think that I would like it? Was it the food or was it the boobs?
I think it's a combination of those. I think at its core, it's just fun. And yes, you know, we will go into these in a little bit more detail later, which kind of sounds pervy to say, but like the foodgasm is a very real thing in real life and in anime. And the fact that they just anime it to the umpteenth degree, just like you said, it goes from, oh, this is a bit awkward, oh, this is orgasmic, to then, oh, this is actually really funny, and then back again. Like it's really, really expertly written, I think, not only from the manga side, but then the way it's animated and translated, and then the voice work to accompany that to sell these scenes in real life are just like chef's kiss. Like we'll find as many food puns and references we can in this episode. And it's just, I just knew from, you know, our time hanging out together and talking, and the way you spoke about when we unpacked Chainsaw Man, I knew this was in that Jesse realm that you'd appreciate and hopefully admire and come to adore as much as I did.
I like how you brought the food gasm. The animation those scenes is so fun. Like I said, I just kind of got off watching Dragon Ball Super. So I've seen a lot of characters transform. This does that in such just a, I don't want to use the word perverse in a sexual way, but in a perverse way.
It's almost like friendly, well, not friendly perverseness. I don't know what the term is, like friendly pervy, like, or acceptable pervy, or like funny pervy. It's like, oh, he's just pervy. Haha, don't worry about that. Like it feels like it's not too, at least for me, it doesn't feel offensive, the perviness.
It's not gratuitous. It's,
yeah, that's a far better word. You're smart, man.
Thank you. That's not going to be my one good call for the whole episode. It's because none of the characters are sexualizing that moment. It is just a sexual moment they're having with their own sort of sensations towards the food. No one's looking at them like, oh, they're naked. Oh, I like that. It's just, how good did that taste? Pretty good.
Yeah. And that's it. Like they can't control themselves, like minor spoilers for this episode and the future 85 after this one. But like, that's the commonality. Like no one is safe from one of these flavor bombs, just blowing their clothes off and blowing their mind, whether it be the nether region mind or the upstairs mind. Like people are having a good time in this show, and it just makes me happy and it makes me hungry. Like I love food and I love the look of anime food.
Oh yes.
And this anime as a whole has some of the sexiest, prettiest dishes. Like you find yourself salivating watching this because it looks so good. And like you said, it's accurate. Like as far as they describe the cooking process, you see the ingredients and how they're prepared. I'm like, this is how it happens in real life. And it's the same as the cookbook that they've done that's based off all the main dishes from the anime. Like they are carbon copies. And I'm still yet to cook any of them because I'm a bit too intimidated, but I will. I will go back and give it a crack one day, I promise.
I am going to try and cook the pseudo pork, or I found that it's actually called roast pork, just kidding. I found the recipe for it. I'm going to cook it this weekend.
Yes.
I will either have a foodgasm, which you'll hear about, or I'll die, which you'll hear about.
Well, I hope it's not the latter. Like, I hope it's the former, because that's a bit extreme. I don't want you dying from some fake pork.
I hope it's the former to the point where it becomes the latter.
Ooh, oh, so yeah, you die from the foodgasm.
Yeah. What a way to go. It's
probably the best way to go. Yeah, that's how I want to go out.
How did he die? Just a potato wrapped in bacon. And he busted a nut so hard he died.
Yeah, and people like at the office be like, yeah, that checks out.
That checks out, yeah. Fair enough.
That sounds like a great time. But yeah, we're going to be unpacking the first episode, yeah, which is called An Endless Wasteland. And the episode, we get a cold open. We don't get the OP to begin with here. It's a nice cold open. And we're just presented with one word broken down into three syllables, we get disgusting. And you're like, all right, I'm interested. I'm intrigued. What is this in reference to? And we don't have to wait too long or introduce to the lead character, Soma. And you can see very quickly, he's a bit of a mad scientist in the kitchen and he's trying to cook up peanut butter squid. And, you know, he's laughing maniacally and you're getting a lot of like dark imagery around him. You can sort of see like, he's crazy, he's mad, this is twisted, this is freaky. And so I'm like, ooh, this is a bit of a wild boy here. And so he's cooking away. And then we're introduced to Miu, who comes in and she's there. And we find out that she does this pretty regularly at the restaurant there. She's coming in to judge the cook-off between Soma and his father. And we find out that in this situation here, Soma, he's only a 15-year-old boy. He's a bit of a whiz in the kitchen. And sadly, he's lost to his dad 489 times and counting in the cook-off. But I just wanted to say a side note before I get your thoughts on these opening couple of minutes. I love fried rice more than just about anything on planet Earth to eat. And seeing these two side-by-side fried rices come out from Joshiro and Soma, oh my God, I got instantly hungry again watching it. Like, a good fried rice is God tier. Like, it's so simple, but it is so perfect and so delicious. So I'm like, this anime has got me hook, line, and sinker again.
That was literally the moment for me. I just looked at it like, okay, anime food is just on a different level. And I don't know how I was able to look at the rice that they use and you knew that it was cooked the day before. They've done it properly. They've got a little bit of MSG sprinkled in there. I don't know how they were able to bring that over in just imagery, but I could taste it. I could smell it. I want fried rice now.
Yeah, I want fried rice most days, but more so after watching an episode of Food Wars because, yeah, I could smell and taste and I could feel my insides sort of retracting from the MSG that was going to frequent my body the second I bit into that fried rice. So, yeah, it looks amazing from both father and son. You can see he's learning and he's nipping at his dad's heels. He just wants to become the very best, as a nice good anime trope we see constantly here. So Miu samples both the fried rice. Soma narrowly misses out again, leading to the 489th time he has suffered defeat at the hands of his father. And his father, he's just a badass, cool looking dude. He's got the long hair, he's got the sort of stubbly beard, fit looking fella, and just can cook up a storm. Like I was idolizing the father a little bit there. And after this happens and the competition is over, we then start to see the neighborhood all coming in and sampling the rice, and they're all having little mini food gasms all through the restaurant. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is some sexy food-based table setting. I'm all about this. And then Miu comes in and she's consoling Soma, you know, there, it's all good. It tasted really good. Like, it's getting so much better. Like, you're going to get there soon enough. And then Soma manages to convince her to try his peanut butter squid dish. And there's a line here where she's eating it in there and she goes, I've been grabbed by the offensive flavor that is violating her entire body. And that's where we see, the squid in this sort of bite moment, the squid has become alive and she's getting wrapped up in all these nasty peanut butter covered squid tentacles, and it's naughty and funny and creepy and all the things I love about anime in this one moment. And I'm like, yes, I love it. How are you feeling when we got to see the nasty squid the first time?
The last time I saw something like that, part of it was pixelated. It was such an intense scene, and up to that,
and it comes out of nowhere.
Literally left field. You thought, this is a disgusting thing they ate. Okay, that's funny. I mean, would you try? Are you bold enough with your culinary taste to give fried octopus with peanut butter a go?
For sure, for sure. Like, I will try anything. I've eaten many good things, many, many horrible things. I've tried to cook and experiment, and I've eaten stuff all over the world, and I figure life is short. You only live once. So what's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to spit it out, or maybe you're going to get wrapped up in a squid tentacle that, poor Miu cops in this instance. But I thought, like, I was reflecting on this in real life and I'm like, you know what? I feel it would work because, squid itself can be a bit salty. Yes. Peanut butter's salty, but you're going to get a bit of creaminess through it. And a good piece of squid, when it's cooked right, has a creamy texture. I feel it would really work.
I feel like somebody on YouTube probably has, like, a Binging with Babish needs to do it. And get that and make it work. Because you're right, the saltiness should work and little bit of sweetness to it. Look, you'd probably just throw up your guts, but I'd be willing to try. Like you said, life's short. Try weird food. My partner and I, we're planning a trip to Japan at the end of the year. And just before this episode, we were talking about staying in a few different places. And one of them does a dinner set, which includes horse sashimi.
Ooh. I've eaten horse, but not sashimi. I've had horse in a burger. It was very strong. It had easiest comparison would be it had a similar taste and texture to kangaroo. Like it was very lean, very strong red meat. But it was fine. I'd never do it again. I just thought, you know what? I'm in Germany. It's a goddamn horse burger at this food truck, at this fair that I was at. And I'm like, when am I going to try this again? So I YOLO'd. I said, nay, I'm going to have one for sure.
God damn it. God damn it. I think you can't also, you can't not have the story of, oh, I went to Germany and ate horse from a food truck, because that's just a very good sentence.
Mm-hmm.
At least you didn't have a similar experience with like a horsegasm. At least you didn't have that.
No. I did see a donkey orgasm in Mexico doing things, but I'm going to leave that at that. But yeah, it's Japan would be very exciting. I hope you're going to try like the live octopus thing. That's the one thing where I don't know how I feel about that. That would be a weird sensation in the mouth and in the throat.
I can't do anything with anything that's alive that weirds me out, especially after seeing that octopus scene from The Boys. I can't. I'm not.
Yeah. So getting back on track before we get cancelled here on More Than Hentai. So poor old Miyu, she is feeling the wrath of the peanut butter squid from Soma. And as that sort of scene is fading out, we're getting some narration from a fantastically voiced, he's got a nice boom to his voice, the narrator, and he's explaining a little bit of context as far as what's going on. He talks about the food world and the art of cooking is dotted with endless examples of the delectable and the repulsive. And that's exactly where Soma wants to be. So, you know, somewhere like in the middle, riding the lightning between insane and, you know, immeasurable type of thing. And I'm like, all right, this guy's a bit of a trailblazer, young Soma, like 15 years old and can cook better than most. I'm backing this kid. I'm in his corner. I'm cheering him on. I want him to succeed and take over the Yukihiro restaurant.
I do like how they grasp the whole like kind of young teenage thing of, I want to be good, but also a little bit gross. Because that in itself is fun. Does that line sort of continue throughout the rest of the series?
Not as in, we don't really hear it verbalized so much throughout the five seasons, but there is a common thread with Soma where he does, like when he does some freestyle cooking, like outside of the competitions where he's a bit more laser focused and stuff, but like when he's just cooking casually and wants to try and learn new things, he's always mixing crazy stuff together and making disasters on plates that just shouldn't work, or we get some horrible scenarios that play out. So yeah, it's a common thing.
That is such a good bit of bait for me to watch the rest of this series, because I'm so curious to see what comes up. Because obviously we had the octopus peanut butter, but then the dad also mentioned the sardines with strawberry jam. I need to hear more of this.
Yeah, I like their little back and forth. So yeah, after sort of the rush of the restaurants died down and the father and son are, I guess, doing the end of shift cleanup and whatnot. And they're sort of having a bit of a flexing contest with like, you know what? I made the more horrible dish. No, mine was the grossest. And yeah, we get the sardines and strawberry jam, which intrigues me. I like a sardine and I love me some strawberry jam. So that's another thing where I'm like, I'll try it. Sounds horrible, but I'll try it.
That's the weird thing. I would, sardines fine. I don't like jam. That's the part that turns me off it.
I forgot about that. And that's your initials.
That's
as
my
well.
Initials. Yep.
Makes me sad. But the OP of Food Wars does not make me sad, because after we get that little back and forth about who is the grossest chef, we get a little ditty. Kibu no Uta is the song, and it's done by the band Ultra Tower. Good little toe tapper, good little fun vibes. It throws a lot of characters to us in this opening, a lot of people we haven't met yet. So we're like, okay, they're going to play a part at some stage in this journey. We see a lot of the standard tropes and stereotypes that we're used to in anime or in just film and any type of media, where we've got, you know, the pretty princess ones, the jocks, the nerds, everything else in between. But I like that they weave in these little character intros with some really sick cooking scenes and like, you know, cooking exchanges with some of these characters we don't know as well as Soma just being bad mothers in the kitchen. And I'm like, yes, I'm so hyped. I want more of this food in and around my mouth, please.
I really like that cooking has become kind of badass with, you know, stuff like this. I mean, obviously off late we've had stuff like the bear and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the action shots with just, you know, a little bit of flame, a little bit of flambé, some sharp knives, it makes you so hype. If you take a step back, you're like, it's a cooking show. You're just watching people cook. But in that moment with the music and all this, like, the animation style, I'm a big fan of it, it gets you going.
It really does. And, like, I like that you explore, like, how you talked about, yeah, the flambéing and the flame, how it is just that at its root. But, like, you think of that in comparison to some of the other anime or some of the other media you're out there watching, and that's sort of the equivalent of, you know, the big uppercut or the home run or the kicked goal and all that. So you're seeing them do these things and you're sort of cheering and rooting for them because it is a match. It is a fight they're playing out in the culinary arena, I guess we could say, Jesse. But yeah, it's so good. And yeah, it's a little bit of a banger of an intro. I prefer the intro compared to the outro that's in the ED, Rising Rainbow. It's fine. It's workable. Oh, sorry, Spices for the first 14 episodes. And then after that, it shifts, which is something that I still am unsure about with anime in general, where they, like, I know it's a tonal shift and maybe the characters have been through some adversity or they've grown up, but I'm like, if you've got a banger OP and a banger ED, just stick with it. Like, change the graphic, but keep that track.
I forgot that happened. So often, say, watching Dragon Ball Super, where it changes every 4 episodes, was so jarring, especially, you know, obviously there's a lot of filler episodes, so you sort of zone out a little bit and then you're like, this is a new song. Why does it sound like Shakira? It's I didn't love the outro song in this episode, but that, again, that opener hits.
Yeah. It's just a tone setter and it just sort of gets that good vibe rolling. And then we're back in the Japanese eatery, Yukihara. The father and son are in there running around. The restaurant's popping off. People are in there having a great time. The place is packed. Every table is full, super busy. And as we start to sort of see some of the patrons leave the restaurant, we get this weird shady shot where it's like, it feels almost like they're FBI secret agents sitting outside in a car. They've got the suits on. They've got the glasses on, even though it feels like it's getting close to dinner. And like, what's going on here? What are these sus sons of guns up to? And so we get that really sort of fleeting scene of this female and her 3 cronies in this car parked out the front looking very suspect. And then we're back in with Soma, and he's reflecting on the cook-off and how badly he wants to surpass his father in skill. So you can sort of see that's his goal. That's his drive. He wants to become the man of the Yukihara restaurant or the Yukihara bloodline and you know, allow his dad at the ripe old age. I think his dad was 36. Like, you know, he looks great. He's got his whole life ahead of him, but he's like, you know what, dad, settle down. I'll take over the restaurant now. You do you. And so we're having this moment, and then the secret agents roll in. And as does some fantastic fan service, because the secret agents roll in and the female secret agent, I didn't catch her name, so we'll just say female secret agent X, she rolls in and she's got some gravity-defying breasts that are just bouncing around and saying hello to Soma in a very big way. And I'm like, what is happening here? Where is this going to take us? But then we find out that they're not secret agents. They're in fact members of the Urban Life Planners, which are there to, they want to level the area, build multi-rise living and make it all schmick and fancy and for the higher-ups and the high rollers of Japan. And it's an interesting introduction here. We can already start to say, okay, is this where the conflict is going to play out long-term? Is this going to be the constant foil here, the Urban Life Planners and their evil antics?
I didn't expect that scene to happen. Because you see these guys, you see these guys roll in, and I kind of thought they're going to trash the place. Like, obviously, they're going to be sort of the villains of the episode. And I do, again, like, you know, in these slice of life animes, your villains are going to be kind of lower level. So I like how they got like urban planners and landlords, you know, actual villains in the show. But when she walks in, I was feeling things.
Yeah, she's a good-looking woman. Like, you know, if I was running a humble restaurant and she's like, hey, I'm going to pay all this money to close down, I'd be like, sure, I'll think about it.
Done.
Like, you wouldn't, free later?
You wouldn't think.
Here's the deed. I'm signing it over right now. So, yeah, we're introduced to the evil urban life planners. We get some really great animation in these sequences between Soma and the woman. And there's a lot of really tight focus shots on both of their eyes, like almost like a Western standoff where it's like, who's going to blink first in this exchange? And she's sort of back and forth and trying to bait Soma a little bit as far as getting to the understanding of, you know, what would make you close up the restaurant? Like, you know, why would you not want to work at the Yukihira restaurant anymore? And Soma sort of says they'd close up if they couldn't service their customers. I'm like, oh, that's a bit ominous. That's a plot point there that's going to be, you know, acknowledged now or in future episodes, I'm sure.
And it was acknowledged, you know, a few moments, later. I mean, we'll get into it in a moment, but when she comes back, he would just look like, ah, oh, shit. I shouldn't have said anything.
Yeah, silly 15-year-old boy. So, yeah, that day ends on a bit of a, I wouldn't say a cliffhanger, but, yeah, on certainly a bit of a suspect situation with the urban life planners. So we jump into the next day. Soma's father calls. Soma's already out early buying some ingredients for breakfast and running errands for the shop because he's just a good kid. And, yeah, the dad sort of calls and says, yo, I've also got to run some errands. I'm going to be busy, so we're going to close the shop for today. So don't worry about opening. And you're like, ooh, it's a little interesting too. That seems a little suspect. What is happening here? And as Soma is heading back to the restaurant, he's reflecting on his father and like how little he knows about his father. He's like, apart from what happens in the kitchen, I don't know anything about my dad's past. I don't know anything about his hobbies. I don't really know anything about him apart from being the master of knives and, you know, the fryer of rice. So, yeah, it's very like also like I'm like, okay, is this going to get unpacked more? Like what's happening with, you know, Mr. Yukihara here? Where does he play into this? And so as he's thinking about all this, he returns back to the restaurant and the dastardly urban life planners have struck. They've vandalized the shop. They've also ruined all the meat and produce that they've had stored in the fridge and in the freezer and in just the lockup and whatnot. And so Soma's freaking out a little bit. And then lo and behold, the dastardly urban life planners sort of come out of the shadows very much like, like almost twisting a mustache evilly. And she comes out and there's a lot of sexual innuendo here where she's like, you know what? I'm in the mood for a thick and juicy cut of meat. And you're like, oh, Mamma Mia, like I got a steak in the fridge. Like, you want me to get this ready for you, anime lady? Because I'm ready to cook. But she brings up the quote again here where she's like, you know what? I remember what you said just yesterday where if you can't provide what the customer needs, you're going to close the door of the restaurant forever and it will become ours and we can build the multi-rise and all that stuff I mentioned earlier. And you're like, oh, what's going to happen? The stakes cannot get higher, Jesse.
Yeah, stakes. I see what you did there. That was good. For one, I don't think that would hold up in court saying, oh, this 15-year-old kid who was bedazzled by my badonkers said whatever I wanted him to and then he couldn't cook a meal because they trashed the restaurant in the same way that Jack Nicholson's Joker posse trashed that museum. They just caused some minor mischief. They knocked a few lettuces over, letti, I guess. They knock a few things over.
I'd say that'd be the plural of a lettuce, a letti. If it isn't, we're using it from moving forward.
We learned pretty quickly that they didn't trash everything. They splashed some paint on the front sign. I loved when they got into the innuendo and puns. I'm a big fan of puns. And they make a few, but they keep saying that thick, juicy meat one. And they just keep, like a better term, pounding it.
Very tender. Very tender.
That's why I wear glasses now.
Well, they look good on you, I must say. But yeah, so we get this whole build up and I love that this exchange does end on the very cliched, maniacal laugh from the evil mastermind because she's like, you know what? I've got you, Soma. The Yukihira restaurant, that's going to be mine. But like you said, he's a 15-year-old boy. This woman might potentially be in trouble for maybe like sexually assaulting a minor indirectly. Oh, Who knows? Like if anything, she's probably the one that's going to get in trouble here, not Soma. And I doubt Soma's name is on the deed to the restaurant anyway. But like you said, we don't need to get into the specifics and the legal ramifications here. But Soma gladly accepts this challenge. And we get this really cool scene here where we see him like level up in this moment where he whips out his trademark white headband that nearly flows to the floor. And we're getting really cool animations, like a battle scene or a pre-battle scene where he's just like getting ready to go to war with the evil urban life planners here. And then he drops his battle cry and it's like, order up! And then it's like, time to get down to business. I'm like, yes, let's go. I'm in. The next scene, though, I feel this next scene is like a tone setter for the anime moving forward holistically, because this is where we see Soma in the kitchen cooking up a storm. They're mixing in shots focusing on not only like his facial animations and concentration, they're focusing on his hands prepping and showing like really intricate knife work, really tight shots of the food. They mix in like slow motion and freeze frame in this sequence as well. Combine that with like some of the poses and the hero movements he's doing. But then we've also got like this epic soundtrack that's overlaid over it too, that is just like hyping this thing up even more and building the tension. And I feel JC Staff, like, they're a fantastic production house, but they are like firing on all gas burners here, Jesse. They are firing on all six gas burners. The food looks amazing. I love the look of all the characters. And I love the combination of reality and foodgasm fantasy. Like, it's just this sort of montage that goes for maybe, I don't know, 30 to 60 seconds max is just Food Wars in a nutshell. And I am here for it.
You get to kind of see the cooking in a way that, Soma feels it. Because he's a kid and his whole life is cooking. So when he is slicing things up, he feels badass. When he's, you know, popping all the burners on, he feels like a superhero. So I love that you could just almost see it, how he would feel it. And again, at this point, I'm like, why am I cheering for a cooking show? It's bonkers.
It's the best, Jesse. It's the best.
I say that like I haven't cheered, like, and actually stood up on my couch watching Iron Chef before.
Love me. I'm a sucker for like any type of food-based show, whether it be anime or real life. Like, I watched an episode of MasterChef just before this because I'm like, I got some time to kill. I was just channel surfing. I'm like, oh, MasterChef's on. I'll get behind this. And a guy got really teary-eyed cooking some pork belly. And I'm like, you know what? I'm in your corner, brother. Give me a bite of that. I love you.
Same. Actually, odd segue here. I saw that you recently got a robo vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
So we have one as well. And we have named, you know, you, like you said, you like Iron Chef. We've named him Hiroyuki Sakai.
Oh, that's so good.
And we're going to put a little sticker of Hiroyuki on him and stuff like that. One of them, I can't remember which one. One of the Iron Chefs is actually coming to Melbourne.
Really?
It is Hiroyuki Sakai. He's coming to Melbourne. He's doing a some thing at a winery. It's like $800 a
Oof, that's an expensive meal. I was about to say, like, do we want to go to this together? And then it's like, oh, that's a lot of dollary dues.
I still kind of do, to be honest.
Well, if it's at a winery, it might be somewhere down near me, to be honest.
You may just see him
on the peninsula.
Maybe we should do, what do they call it when they when somebody drives a car behind like their like team in America, like as their team tours around?
Like a convoy?
Like tailgating, or no, I think that's the term, whatever it's called.
A convoy, like a tailgate, usually a static party in a car park, but a convoy where he'd be the leader and would be cars back, like following him around. I'll join an Iron Chef convoy for sure.
In a non-creepy way, if anyone who knows Hiroyuki Sakai is listening, we're joking, wink, wink, we're not. We should follow him around, and just as the scraps fall out of his car, we eat him up. Like, I'm sure he's cooking in there, practicing.
I'll hand feed him peanut butter squid if he wants. Like, I don't mind. I'll even like mama bird, baby bird it for him if that's what he's into. Like, yeah, nothing's off limits here. I'm in.
Yeah.
Just like with this anime, I am so in. And the urban life planners, Jesse, they were in this moment because they are shook. They are like, how is this young boy, this 15-year-old prodigy, how is he able to make something that is meaty and juicy and thick when we've destroyed and spoiled all the meat? How can this happen? Like, we've ruined their day. This restaurant's going under. But then he unveils his correct creation, and he's like, it's a pork roast, but he used a potato and wrapped it in the bacon that he bought for breakfast that they were going to have earlier. So it's a bit of a clever misdirect there from Soma, and he thought, you know, what can he work with here to make a meaty dish? But then the woman, being the dastardly evil thing she is, she's calling him out. And she's like, no, that's bullshit. I asked for a meaty dish. She starts trashing the restaurant. you know, saying this is nonsense. I've worked with like Michelin chef equivalents in all her high rise fancy pants restaurants that she helps get off the ground, and continues to sort of belittle Soma. But then he's like, you know what, woman, shut up and eat this up, and let's see how you're feeling afterwards. And he puts the plate down, and she sits down, and you can see like she's within earshot of the plate. She's still a few meters from the plate at this moment when he puts it down on the table, but she gets that aroma, like Pepe Le Pew style, yes, creeping into the nostrils, and you can see it's already getting to her, and she's already starting to squirm and get a little wound up from this fake pork roast.
She was very into it, and to be honest, as I watched it, so was I. I think I was feeling very much the same way.
I nearly spat my tea.
It was like a sexy curiosity to it. It's like I shouldn't want this, but I do. It was forbidden love or lust.
I see why, you know, Eve ate the apple all those years ago, because sexy curiosity is a real thing. Because
it was covered in bacon. And she was told it was a meatball.
Oh God, shout out to meatballs. I love meatballs. But anyway, the evil woman, she sits down, takes one bite, and that foodgasm just goes whack. And you can see from just that singular bite, she's explaining that there is just this bliss that's sort of engrossing her and covering her from toenail to the top of her head. Like she's in food nirvana. And this whole scene where, yeah, obviously the clothes are starting to burst off and whatnot, but we get a lot of the gods raised. We don't see any full-fledged nudity. Full disclaimer, any smut hunters that are listening to this podcast that want to see the whole box and dice, you don't see any of that stuff. It's god rays covering up the nipples and the female and the male genitalia. So there is some suggested nudity, but you never see the whole hog, especially here because it's a fake potato. So
cowards.
But I like that they tread the line. I like that, like, it's naughty and smutty and very much in that ichi vein, but it's weirdly tasteful in a way. Like the god rays and the way they animate it and the sequences, it is very tasteful and classy, which is weird to sort of say when there's food-based nudity going on.
It looks like a character having an orgasm mid magical girl transformation. Like, yeah, just the lights, the colors, and then the guys get involved and they're all being covered up by various different sized god rays, I'll say that.
Yeah. It's very cleverly done. And yeah, you know the different sized god rays were not by accident from JC staff. Like, they're implying that some are more endowed than others, I guess we could say.
Have you ever had a meal that made you feel close to that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love food so much, and when food is good, like, a lot of friends and family make fun of me because they'll know oftentimes I'll do like a little dance in my seat and stuff like that. But there's been a few moments where I've eaten food and it has nearly blown my socks off or blown a load out of me, and it's not a regular thing, luckily, because that would be embarrassing. But I think the most recent one I had, this is going to sound super wanky, but I was in Dubai 2 months ago now. And obviously Dubai is full of rich, obnoxious people, and there's just more money than sense in this place. And we were out, and I didn't even go to the restaurant, which makes it even funnier, but we're on Uber Eats trying to work out some things to order for dinner. And I saw Salt Bay's restaurant was on there.
Oh,
and
I'm like, no.
Okay, this sounds interesting. And he's got a gold leaf burger on there. So I got this burger delivered to me. So I lose, you know, let's say 20 to 30% quality and freshness due to the delivery process in itself. But this burger was still that good and that juicy that maybe a little bit of pre-cum came out of this thing. Like, it was delicious. Yes, it was a $300 burger. And I didn't realize that. I knew it was expensive, but I didn't know the conversion to a T. So I paid a lot of money for this thing, but I don't regret it.
I'm glad you didn't, for lack of a better term, finish. Because I think if I was to line up every person on earth in order of who I'd want to make me come, Salt Bae is so far down the negative end of that line.
Yeah, like, I don't have a strong opinion on him either way. Like, I respect that he's gotten this far from hustle and yeah, he went viral and he capitalized on it. And you know what? This burger was delicious. He seems like maybe a bit of a punce in real life. Yeah. And yeah, maybe I don't want him to tickle my pickle literally in real life. But you know what? He made a good, or his underling made a good burger, and I'm all the better for it. So yeah, Salt Bae Gold Leaf Burger, double thumbs up for me for the audio listeners. It was a very tasty treat. But yeah, we're having this situation here where the evil urban planner lady is having this foodgasm situation. Soma interrupts and he starts to break down and explain his cooking process. And this is one of the things I love with this anime. It's not just big moment, boom, foodgasm, that's it. They go into the science, they go into the cooking process and explain not only the tips and how they prepare these things, but they also list the ingredients on the screen as well. So if you're there with a pen and paper, you can sort of take notes and work out what they've done to make this thing become the flavor bomb that it is. And I do love, and there's a constant in this, minor spoiler, not spoiler at all, but like umami is a constant thing that gets referenced in Food Wars throughout the entirety of the 86 episodes. And yeah, obviously he packed this thing with umami due to the cooking process and how the potato reacted with these herbs and the bacon and rah, rah, rah. And it's really cool and it's really fun and it's really educational. And I love that about this show, because it just went from like a lady's clothes just got blown off because she had a bite of this thing. And now I'm learning some science about cooking. Like, it's just insane, but it works.
Yeah, the show's like teaching you, like, this is how you get a woman naked. You cook this pork.
Cooker of potato.
Cooker of potato. You have to find the right woman. Yeah, this is the part that really, really got me involved, because it'd be so easy for them just to say, he's just that good a cook. He's just that good. It's borderline magic. We'll never explain it. We don't need to. And if they did it, went that way, cool. That's fine. But to go into it and be like, they've thought about this. They've made this. And it must have tasted pretty good. I'm still confused how it looks so crispy. That's the thing I'm going to have to work out. I've got a feeling that I'm going to make this a few times until I get it right. But like I said, I got the recipe. I've actually got it next to me. It's super easy to do from what I can see. But I'm going to follow, while I have the instructions next to me, I'm actually going to follow the episode's steps.
I love this.
And do it properly. I may be in the kitchen now, but whatever. And yes, I will report back, because it looked genuinely good. And then when you have the explanation of behind it, of like, yes, the mushrooms react with everything and it absorbs all the bacon fat and flavor when it's cooking. It made sense.
Mm. It does. And like the science behind a lot of this is they actually engaged with a celebrity Japanese chef known as Yuki Murasaki. He got involved and actually helped advise behind the scenes as far as how these cooking processes happen, and add some fact to the crazy foodgasm fiction that's going on. So I do like that they're respectful to the craft and respectful for how these things actually take place. So yeah, I appreciate that they got someone with real world experience involved in this. It's not just all fake pie in the sky stuff. It's actually truth. And I'm looking forward to seeing this fake pork potato realized by yourself in the coming days. That excites me very much. But something else that sort of I had a little bit of a fist bump for and some pseudo excitement here is where Soma's explaining that cooking process. And he sort of also says that he found inspiration from this dish from prior failures. So I like that he isn't just this perfect prodigy that can do no wrong. They show that in that one little line, it shows, okay, he's human, he's learning, he does fail, he has hardships, and it's not always, top of the class, as evidenced by the nearly 500 losses to his dad. Like, he's got some comeuppance over the years, and it hasn't stopped him. It's he's still on that grind. So I respect this young man's hustle.
Yeah, it almost also harkens back to, you know, how he's making the disgusting food. It's not so much that he's making them disgusting on purpose. He's pushing the bounds just to see where his current skill set at that time can take him, knowing that it's constantly building. Every time he makes something and goes wrong, he'll learn something from it. So I'm hopeful that when he does make these more disgusting things like the octopus and the peanut butter, I'm hoping in future episodes he can kind of refer back to some of those moments to be like, hey, those flavors didn't work. Maybe I just add this and it will work. So I'm hoping there's a bit of that and you get to see that build get built upon, because I agree, that was a really cool moment.
Yeah, nah, and not going to confirm nor deny but maybe loosely confirmed. But yeah, there is a lot of reflection.
Excellent.
And analyzing of past failures and why things worked and why things didn't over these five seasons. So it's yeah, it's really well written. It's just great. So anyway, yeah, he explains the situation. And after he sort of has this talk with her, she wants to eat more, but Soma's like, nah, you're done, lady. And he goes to throw the dish out unless she promises to leave the restaurant alone forever and you know, never come back and try and overthrow the restaurant with her evil and dastardly ways. And at first she's like, no, I can't. But then as he goes to, I guess, bin this delicious potato pork, she begs him for more and he gives in after. She's like, yep, I promise I'll never come back. The restaurant's safe. The Yukihara restaurant is fine. Don't worry about it. We're going to leave you be. And so, yeah, puts the plate back on the table. And we see not only her, but the other three cronies in this moment all have a good chow down. And everybody in this moment, they're all naked. Clothes are shooting off everywhere. We got God's rays covering all kinds of appendages. And this four-person foodgasm scene, it goes for a good 20 seconds.
Yes.
And I think the cherry on top of this scene is after that 20 seconds, they're all laying on the floor as if they've just had sex. Like they're all laying there on the floor satisfied. I wouldn't have been like, I would have loved and probably just died from laughter if someone like sort of said, I need a cigarette or like so someone just lights a smoke up afterwards. So I think there was a missed opportunity there, but this whole scene was also just, it was stupid funny. It was stupid in general. The animation was phenomenal. And I never get sick of seeing foodgasms in this show. And you see many.
I mean, look, I can't speak for you. You know, you've had your own adventures throughout your own life. I've never seen somebody edge somebody with a potato.
That's, I don't think I have either. Yeah.
Hey, maybe that's an experience we can share one day. But that part made me laugh so much. But it does make you think, what if the dad returned at that moment and he saw the whole restaurant, you know, ruined, five naked people on the ground covered in potato and bacon grease while his son, his 15-year-old son, mind you, is standing over them with a knife? What a strange tableau that is.
I reckon Joshiro, the father, I reckon it wouldn't have surprised him. I feel because we saw some little mini-gasms happening just from general patrons the day before eating the rice and stuff. I feel that this is just a day in the life of the Yukihara boys. Like people be food-gasming in and around them all day, every day. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert, whatever. Like whenever they're peckish and they're cooking, people be food-gasming.
Just a single tear rolls down his cheek. He's like, oh, that's me boy.
My boys growing up. Yeah, just a proud parent moment. But yeah, the situation plays out. We then jump forward to the next day and we see Soma. He's up early cleaning off the paint and the vandalism from the Yukihara signage that the evil orgasmic urban life planners did to try and overthrow them just the day before. Cleaning the signage up, and we're getting a little bit of reflection here from Soma. And he's like, you know what, this restaurant, it is my temple, and this is where I'm going to master cooking. So you can see, like at 15, he's laser focused on his goal. He knows what he wants to achieve and who he wants to become. And then, lo and behold, the old man just casually rolls back in. He's disappeared for the last 24 hours, running errands. Like it's a long errand to run, Jesse. I don't know what he was up to, but he rolls in, asks his son, you know, what happened. Soma really downplays it, but then the dad just casually goes, "Oh, and by the way, I'm gonna have to close the shop for a few years." And you're like, what? I beg your pardon? What is happening here? And he's like, yeah, an old colleague has sort of reached out to me and I've got to work with him. So we're closing the shop. Good luck, boy. And obviously some more stuff happens after that. But you're sort of like, what? This place is the temple where Soma wants to master cooking and become the very best. And now it's just gone? What? After he fought so hard and made these people come from a fake pork potato?
Which is, again, hell of an effort. This is a genuinely good rug pull. I didn't expect it. I thought it was going to be, dad gets back, asks what happened. He explains it and he's like, oh, you know, maybe you can take over the restaurant or, you know, whatever that next chapter of the restaurant is. But to take that away completely and make that restaurant sort of the reward at the end of his, you know, his trials and tribulations he's about to go through, I think it was a really, really cool idea. I love how nonchalant the dad is. It's like, oh yeah, we're closing up for a few years. I'm going to have to apologize to a few people, but, you know, shit happens. Because at the same time, he's also saying, oh, son, I'm leaving. It's not just the rest of the clothing. Yeah. He's like, I'm out. You know, I'm booting.
Yeah, and he's leaving in like 5 minutes. It's not like I'm leaving I'm packing in a week. And I'm out. He's like, once I'm done packing, see you, son. Like, good luck. You're a 15-year-old kid. And he's like, I'll transfer you some money once in a while. Like, that's the extent of like the support that he's gonna throw behind Soma at 15 years old. So Soma's sort of trying to work out what's going on. Now we get a couple of little scenes intercut here with one another where we're having that discussion between the Yukihara boys. And also we're seeing Soma now very well dressed, casually walking along the like a Japanese path there, got the nice garb on, and he's got something in his hand, and you're like, what is this? What's going on here? I don't understand. And we find out that he's got entrance exam form in his hand. And we're sort of, yeah, cutting back between that scene and also, yeah, the father and son sort of discussing what's happening on the fly. Because like you said, Jesse, the daddy's like, yeah, aces, I'm gone. I'm packing this bag and I'll see you in a couple of years. Like, good luck, kiddo. But we find out here that the dad has high hopes of, yeah, Soma going to the Tatsuki Fine Dining Academy. And he wants Soma to come back once he learns what he's made of. So go to the academy, prove himself, learn what he's made of, and, you know, all will be good in the world after that. But we're seeing then Soma walking to the academy. He's questioning why he even needs to go. He feels like, what am I going to learn from a bunch of old has-beens? Like, and then we've got some sort of little imaginary scenes playing out his head of like old fogies trying to teach him how to, like, you know, cook toast equivalent sort of stuff.
I have the quote here of the old man. He's making something. He's just shaking a pot. And he says, simple to make it easy to digest. And the two people in the background say, thank you for your wisdom. I lost my shit laughing at this. It was so well done.
It's really, really well done. And yeah, so you start to immediately think that the Tatsuki Fine Dining Academy is going to be a bit of a dead duck because, yeah, the images in Soma's head that it's just going to be exactly like that. Like, thank you for your wisdom, old man or old woman. We appreciate it. Like, let's have a digestible and a cup of tea. But as this is happening, Soma gets a call from his dad and he's explaining to Soma on the fly about this academy where it's the hardest fine dining or culinary school in Japan. Only 10% of people graduate. So you're like, ooh, there's the stakes getting set. Will he or won't he graduate? Will he be part of the lucky 10% with his unique, eccentric peanut butter squid and crazy frenetic cooking style? And then it cuts to black and we get the ED. And it is a fun little toe tapper, the ED, Spice by Tokyo Karankuron, I think you pronounce the band name as. Fun little ditty. But it's interesting because the first half of the ED has some very interesting imagery where the entire cast of most we haven't met yet are naked, but well, suggestively nude again, hiding their nether regions and their breasts with various food items and kitchen implements and stuff like that. And you're like, okay, this is interesting. I am curious, will Soma sink or swim in the culinary world? Is he cut out for this life? I've got many questions, and I didn't have to sort of dwell on those questions for too long because we got a juicy post-credit stinger and we're introduced to none other than Erina Nakiri, aka the God Tongue, who I love. I've got a fantastic couple of t-shirts of her. She's a great character, and I hope you learn to love and appreciate how awesome she is as these episodes roll by, Jesse. But yeah, we're introduced to Erina Nakiri, and it's a very weird scene because she's pretty much naked, and we get some framing and seeing the silhouette and the curvature of her body, and she's naked just casually standing under a waterfall that's just like flowing down her body, and you're like, what? And then she gets hit in the head with a jukebox and you're like, what the hell is going on? And then it sort of pulls us out of this dream state and we see that she's like, you know, the head of a cooking class talking smack to these idiots in there because they've made a dish. And she's like, this is how poor the dish just tasted. Like, I had a bite and then it felt like I got hit in the head by a jukebox, you idiot. Like, learn how to get good. And we get a really quick narrator dive in here with a little brief reveal in the next episode where it is titled The God Tongue. So we get a little bit more of a focus on Erina. But that is the end of the first episode of Food Wars. And my goodness, was that a delicious serving.
It was a mouthful. I almost missed that after credit scene. I was going to close the window and then I saw how much the episode's left. I'm like, maybe. So I did go forward and watch that. Utterly confused by the jukebox, and I like when it cut back because have you watched much Key and Peele?
A little bit. Not enough to be like, if you probably throw something that's specific, it might go over my head, but I'm listening. So I'm on the right.
The sketch they have, and look, you like you said, you watched MasterChef before. It's taken from that. On those types of shows, the way it's scripted, it's you lead in with a compliment, and then you twist it, and then you go to ad break. So it's like, you know, this tasted great. It's something I would say if I'd never had food before. Blah, blah, blah. It was very much that sort of moment, which was like, okay, this, even though this show sort of preceded a lot of the cooking shows that I watch nowadays, I'm able to relate them. Like, there was so much really good commentary on food culture and the way it's critiqued in that. Like, I'm getting, you know, again, using more modern shows, I'm getting like a lot of like the menu from it. And just this, like, really sharp, biting. Oh, the menu was so good. But, like, food critique culture is brutal and just dark and twisted. And that's what I'm getting from this. And I think I will fall in love with her. Sorry, I'm gonna rephrase that. I have fallen in love with her already.
That makes me so happy. It warms my old beating heart here because, I fell in love with it very quickly back in the day. And yeah, it's as I said earlier in the episode, it's one of my favorite anime of all time. And now that we've sort of embarked on this journey for this episode, I've started another rewatch of Food Wars. So I'm excited to go through all 86 episodes one more time and just be along for such a crazy, tasty, smutty, hilarious ride. And I like the stakes are constantly getting raised with the future seasons, the future episodes, some of the characters you meet. Like, obviously, the characters that Soma meets, like, they're either leveling up or he has to level up. So we're seeing, you know, the stakes and the pressure and the just overall insanity build on top. And you go, man, is this like House of Cards vibe? Is this all just going to collapse one day on poor Soma? Or will he survive and become the next Iron Chef and be one of the 10%? That graduates from the academy? But yeah, I can't say enough good things about this. But I guess it goes without saying, like, I don't really need to ask, like, you're going to keep watching Food Wars?
100%. I love what it delivered. Soma is such a likable character, and like you said, he's well thought out. The part where he's self-reflective sort of does take him beyond a lot of characters you see, well, I've seen in shows like this. They sometimes lack a little bit of self-reflection, but it has, for all the crassness in the episode, it has that depth, a bold depth flavor to it.
Ooh, good call. Yeah, it's got some nice emotional umami that just cleanses the palate effortlessly, some might say, in this show. And especially, like, there is always a risk with the concept of this podcast where we only deep dive on that first episode. You might not get enough to hook you, to lead you to the main course, so to speak. But, you know, the rule of three is the usual thing with anime. But I think after episode one, it does enough to get you interested. You understand the world. You understand the crazy cooking mechanics and what happens when the Yukihara family cook, and maybe other people have similar abilities to make people foodgasm. Is it a unique thing to just them? Or is this just good cooking in general happens? Like, is this going to be their superpower? Do other people have equivalent superpowers in the culinary world? Like, how's it all going to play out? Like, I've got so many questions. And, like, I remember the first time I watched that episode, when I'm like, fuck, I'm in. And I binged, like, that first season within the span of like a day, because that's just what some of these things do to me. And, like, I scored this on my anime list. I gave it a 10 out of 10 because you can't do half scores. You can't do if I could, I'd probably sit it at a 9.5, but it's more of a 10 than a 9 to me. So it's a 10 out of 10 for me because I love it. It's everything I love about anime. It combines some of my favorite things in the world, and it just does it so goddamn well.
You've sold it so well to me. You've sold it so well. I'm glad it's a long weekend, because I think I'm going to get a fair bit of this watch, and I'll keep you in the loop. I'll report back.
Yes, I'm excited to hear how the progress goes with Food Wars. Hopefully it goes further than Chainsaw Man. So I don't want to be disappointed by you twice in one calendar year regarding anime. So but listeners, if you're still on the fence about Food Wars, if you're a fan of Yakitate, which is a fantastic anime about the science and greatness that is bread, well worth checking out. Restaurant to Another World, Toriko, Gourmet Girl Graffiti, and Kakiguri. If you're a fan of any of those, they're the most five commonly recommended. Like, if you like that, you're going to like this on my anime list. So if you vibe with any of those five, give Food Wars a look. But please give Food Wars a look regardless, because it is so goddamn good. But Jesse, we're going to jump into the last word presented by friends over at Japan Crate. Spent Japan through snacks and knickknacks via monthly package drops courtesy of JapanCrate.com. And while you're there, be sure to use code 8bit15 at checkout to get yourself 15% off your purchase and free shipping to anywhere on planet Earth. Jesse, what is your last word, your last words, your last thoughts, your last statement on Food Wars?
My palate has been teased. You know when you get an entree at a restaurant and you can see a little bit of, and you just know what's going to come next. You can smell taste. What other people are eating. You can see it. I'm looking over at your table and you've finished your meal and you are smoking that cigarette. You are post.
I've got no clothes on, just a cigarette and like a bib. I'm wearing a bib and a cigarette. That's it.
And the bib's covering nothing. Absolutely covering nothing. And you were just post O-face, you're loving life. And I'm looking down at the meal and I know what's about to happen. And I'm mentally apologizing to everyone else in the restaurant for what they're about to see. But I'm about to dive into this.
Yeah, I love that. Strap in, embrace the tentacle life. If someone offers you some peanut butter squid, don't say no. Keep open minds lead to open doors, listeners. And Food Wars will open many a door and many a mind. That is for sure. So enjoy that. But Jesse, thank you so much for stopping on by. This is just about one of the most fun podcasts that I've just about ever recorded. I've been cackling for the entirety of this 117 minutes worth of recording. So I appreciate you as always. But share with the listeners again where they can find you and all the fantastic things you're doing, because you're worth hunting down and you're worth listening to, because you've got a great mind. And you're a funny son of a bitch.
Thank you. It is. I was going to say it's a pleasure doing a podcast. It's an honor doing a podcast with you. I always have an absolute blast talking to you. So thank you very much for having me on again. But yes, if you want to find me, my own socials are at Jesse Spanner. And you can also catch Ye Olde Football Podcast at Falcon Footy Pod. We post those once a week. And then on my personal Twitter, you just hear me bitch about music.
Far worse things to bitch
about.
Honestly,
I'm not that funny on my socials.
You're more funny in podcast form. That's why you've got to rate, review, and subscribe to the Falcon Footy Podcast, as well as all the other podcasts you listen to on the regular. Those ratings and reviews, they take no time. They cost no money. It's just positive, good karma. So pay it forward. Those ratings and reviews help keep those emotional lights on in all our little podcaster hearts and help keeps us tracking, keeps us relevant. And speaking of five-star reviews, I just want to shout out to DPretz from the United States for dropping a fantastic review on Apple Podcasts. I won't read the entire review, but I just wanted to sort of take the headline, which he called More Than Hentai, a great beginner-friendly show, well worth looking out. So anyone that is out there that is new to anime or maybe lapsed and is coming back from the wilderness, DPretz knows what's up. So shout out. Thank you so much for taking the time to drop that review. It means the world to me and means the world to everybody else. But also, head on over to morethanhentai.life. That is the hub for this podcast and everything I'm doing over there. You can get your hands on some very delicious merch. You can join the Segoy Squad over there, the low, low price of $1 per month, and get yourself exclusive access to content as well as product. So if you can do that, that'd be great. But otherwise, those ratings and reviews are more than enough to keep those emotional lights glowing eminently, eternally, constantly, just warming this old rib cage right here. But listeners, whether your anime be subbed, dubbed, or still yet to come, enjoy yourself, stay hungry, and much love to all the gorgeous waifus out there. On behalf of myself and the sexy man, Jesse, goodbye.
Bye.